Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. If you're the generous sort, you can be like Ben, Tyler, Janet, Robin, and John, who all support the podcast on Patreon. Through Patreon, you are able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation, which helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store if you feel inclined. So check it out. I'm your host, Dawson Hicks, joined by my co-host, Jacob Atchley, and this week we'll be joined by Miss Mirella Lace. Mirella is Knowledge Mobilization Coordinator with the Ocean Frontier Institute at Memorial University of Newfoundland and Labrador in St. John's, Canada. Her research interests include marine conservation and fisheries sustainability, topics on which she has published peer-reviewed articles and public outreach material. She has previously worked as a research fellow with the Too Big to Ignore Global Partnership for Small-Scale Fisheries Research, as well as a project coordinator with the Ocean Frontier Institute. She also volunteered as Ocean Bridge Youth Ambassador with OceanWise. Mirella is currently a member of the Newfoundland and Labrador Organization of Women Entrepreneurs and the Board of Directors of the Coastal and Ocean Information Network Atlantic. Mirella will also be co-hosting some future episodes of the Fisheries Podcast, and we're very happy to have her on board. Welcome to the Fisheries Podcast, Mirella.
Hi.
Looking at your bio that you sent us, it seems as if you're involved in many different things throughout your career thus far. I think today me and Dawson have come up with some questions just to help our listeners and ourselves learn a little more about you.
Okay, yeah, this sounds great. And thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
The first thing was, what has your academic experience been like? Like, where did you go to school? What did you study?
It all started off when I went to school to study oceanography. So I have a Bachelor of Science in Oceanography from Brazil. So doing oceanography, I was very much focused on marine conservation. I was involved in different projects in marine geology, marine biology as well. But the main thing I was involved with was studying seagrass as a priority area for conservation of the green sea turtle in southern Brazil. So I did a lot of field work trying to figure out relationship between the sediment content and the presence or absence of seagrass so that we would be able to map them out using ArcGIS and know what areas were a priority for conservation of the sea turtles because of a lot of different activities that happen on that coast, such as shipping and fisheries. So we needed to know what were those important areas. So for my degree in oceanography, I focused on that. And then I moved on to get my master's in geography. Did that here at Memorial University in St. John's, Newfoundland, Canada. And for my master's, I focused more on the marine social sciences side. I was doing a lot of research with small-scale fishers, talking to them about how marine conservation impacted their livelihoods and the way they fished. So I kind of moved from the natural sciences and focusing on oceanography to more of the marine social sciences and understanding how people see the ocean and perceive conservation.
For some of our listeners that may not be familiar with what specifically oceanography is, do you mind explaining that?
Yeah, sure. So oceanography, you can think of oceanography as the study of all the different sciences related to the ocean. So we study marine biology, so all the different species in the ocean, how they interact. And then we study marine geology, which I said I was involved with as well. So the different environments, and we studied, for example, beach geomorphology and how sediments change at erosion processes, accretion processes in the coastal areas. But also you can think of that as a large scale marine geology too. So thinking of plate tectonics and how the continents were formed, how the oceans were formed. And then we also look into physics, so thinking about waves and currents and how they affect transportation of heat in the ocean and how it impacts us as well. We can also think of oceanography as the study of the chemistry of the ocean, so the composition of the ocean and how it interacts with all these other different disciplines and sciences, so how the geochemical cycles are related to the species that are in the ocean and all that, and the interaction between the atmosphere and the water. So these are the four main sciences related to oceanography. And I tend to say that marine social sciences is one of them as well. So the school I went to study oceanography in South Brazil, was one of the few ones in Brazil that also had a focus in marine social sciences. So we also had disciplines studying how people interact with the ocean, different activities, studying sociology, economics, because I do think that we affect the ocean and we are affected by the ocean as well. So I feel that the study of people is very much connected to oceanography. So I do think it's important to not dissociate those, even though it's more of a natural sciences. I feel like they're very much connected to the social sciences as well.
That was a very good explanation.
Thanks.
Marilla, Jacob and I are students at a place called Arkansas Tech University, which is a considerable ways inland and very far from a marine fishery of any kind. So the vast majority of our curriculum here is based in freshwater fisheries such as lakes, rivers, and small streams. And because we specialize in that, it's always really interesting to hear about people who work in marine fisheries because we get to learn a lot about some of the things outside of our field of expertise. So I was just wondering, what initially got you into marine fisheries? Like, what sparked your interest in this field specifically?
Yeah, that's a good question because interestingly, I'm originally from inland Brazil. So I'm from what we consider to be a small town close to São Paulo city. So we only had a river around us, not very close to the ocean. But I grew up going to the beach a lot as a kid for vacation. We were maybe a couple hours from the beach. And I feel like it has always been the kind of place where I just really felt a connection with the oceans and since I was a kid, with nature in general. But I think I always had some kind of a special connection there with the ocean, and I always liked being near the ocean and doing activities in the ocean as well. But until then, I didn't really know what I wanted to study yet until I was 17 years old, which is when I went to university. And I feel like it was because I really liked sciences in general, and I really liked the idea of trying to understand nature better in general. And I was trying to find a discipline that would let me study nature in a way that I didn't have to really choose one discipline only. So I feel like oceanography kind of gave me that at the time. That was part of my decision. It was because I would be able to still study biology, geology, chemistry, physics, and all that together, looking at this one environment. And I thought that was really cool at the time. And I started to like the ocean even more when then I moved right next to the ocean to study oceanography. And I've been living next to the ocean since. So I feel like that connection can be established even if you don't really live near the ocean, just by there's so many things today, like this podcast, that can bring you a bit closer to stories about the ocean and other bodies of water in general, but also through movies and through music and through so many other ways and through the arts in general, not just sciences, that we can learn about the ocean and connect with it even when we're not close to it, because we are still affected by it even when we don't live by the ocean, right?
Yeah, I agree. You definitely, at least in my experience, I always loved the water specifically, like going to the river and going to lakes and stuff like that and fishing with my family. But I guess I didn't realize how much I actually enjoyed it until I got into this field and started going to school for it. I just got such a greater appreciation for it. So yeah, I definitely agree 100%.
Yeah, I've had so many good experiences too. I guess I can relate to that as well. I really enjoy fishing, and I've enjoyed fishing since I was fishing in like small lakes where I used to live, and then enjoy fishing in the ocean as well, and just doing all kinds of things in the ocean, just like swimming or kayaking or trying to surf and all kinds of things. I really think that there's something special there in the ocean that brings us close to it somehow.
All right. So reading through your bio, I read something that I had never personally heard of. Will you explain what is too big to ignore and like what their overall aim is?
Yeah, sure. So Too Big to Ignore is a global partnership for small-scale fisheries research. So it's a global project that was funded by the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council in Canada. So this project was running for, I believe, 7 years, and it just finished, but it now became a network of small-scale fishery scientists. The project is really focused on, the name is really about the thing Too Big to Ignore, is about how small-scale fisheries are too big to ignore. So you think of small-scale fisheries as fisheries that are operated from small boats, usually family-owned, family-operated, usually using less damaging fishing gears than industrial fisheries in a smaller scale, closer to the coast. And small-scale fisheries actually represent about 90% of fisher workers around the world. So it employs more people than large-scale fisheries. Hence why the name too big to ignore. There's so many people involved in small-scale fisheries. And that's the kind of fisheries that that contributes the most to livelihoods and to food security, because people who take part in small-scale fisheries usually use the fish they catch also for subsistence, so for their own consumption and the consumption of family members and friends in the community. So the idea of Too Big to Ignore is recognizing the importance of small-scale fisheries around the world, but also the fact that they have been marginalized. So it's really trying to raise the profile of small-scale fisheries, trying to bring attention to them, to small-scale fishers, and to other projects that are also trying to call attention to their importance, right? So it brings together a lot of researchers. It has a big network of partnerships with different projects around the world where that also supports the small-scale fisheries guidelines that were endorsed by the FAO in 2015. So it's very much connected to achieving those goals of having small-scale fisheries, recognizing the values that they bring to the community. So even for things like gender equality and things like I mentioned, food security. So yeah, that's the overall goal of the project, to bring attention to those, that kind of fisheries. And I was part of it as a student at first. So I received a scholarship as a master's student to be part of that project. And later on, I worked with them as a research assistant and as a research fellow as well. So I was doing different projects as part of Too Big to Ignore. And it's definitely a project that I really like, and I really like the overall objective of it. Yeah.
So you said that's in Canada where you are now?
No. So I worked with Too Big to Ignore I finished my master's in 2016, and then I worked with them until 2018, and I did my master's funded by them as well. But then after that, I started working with the Ocean Frontier Institute, which is a project also Canada-based and also based here in Atlantic Canada, where the Ocean Frontier Institute is this partnership between three universities in Atlantic Canada. And it has a lot of focus in oceanography, but also some projects within it are focused in marine social sciences. And that's the one that I'm part of today. It's actually an interdisciplinary project that focuses on ocean governance in general. And there's people from all kinds of disciplines in it. There's people from engineering, from all kinds of disciplines in natural sciences, in social sciences, humanities, and arts as well. And it's a really cool project because it brings all these different disciplines together to try to understand the future of the ocean and how we can all together contribute to the governance of an ocean that we want as part of the UN Ocean Decade. And so that's where I work today as part of the Ocean Frontier Institute.
So I know that the social science side of the fisheries field, it gets overlooked quite often with people that they go into the fisheries field for the biology side of working hands-on, the field work, which I know on the social science side, there is some of that. But what drew you to the social science side versus the hands-on field work biology side?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I did have the field work side of natural sciences go into the field, collect samples of seagrass in the mud flats, walking around the mud flats and going on the boat, trying to find our waypoints in the GPS and things like that. So I did a lot of field work in the natural sciences. And then as part of this project with the seagrass and sea turtles that I did in my undergrad, I started realizing that as an oceanographer and dealing only with the natural sciences side of things, I started realizing that I was making a lot of recommendations that were coming out of my research. And the recommendations were always about people in the end, right? So it was always about how we should influence policy so that we would be able to conserve the sea turtles in the end. And also for the marine special planning to account for those seagrass ecosystems so that they wouldn't get degraded even further and affect all the marine environment there. So I realized that in the end, the results of my research were only going to actually affect conservation on the ground if people were willing to do it, and if not only governments but also local people, if they saw a meaning behind it and if they wanted to be what we call environmental stewards as well. So if they wanted to preserve the environment. So that's when I started getting really interested in the marine social sciences. And I thought then maybe that was the next thing for me to try to understand what would make people want to conserve the environment, and were they already doing it themselves maybe, and how were they doing it? How could we best support what was already being done? So what was really the key turning point there was when I was living in coastal Brazil and finishing my undergrad in oceanography, there was an announcement on TV that a new marine protected area had just been established right next to where I used to live there on the coast. It was just like some islands that you could see from right from the shore. And everyone learned about that in the same way. Everyone learned about it from the TV, from the news. So that was pretty shocking to me that there was no public consultation at all in the process, as you would normally expect. So just like me, the small scale fishers who lived in those communities learned that way too, that the area that they've always used to fish was now closed for conservation. And it was a no-take protected area. So they wouldn't be able to go there anymore and catch the fish in the area that was the most productive in that time of the year. So that was really what struck me that just couldn't happen that way, that the lives of many people were being impacted by that decision, and that we needed to have a better process for it. So that was actually the subject of my master's. Even though I was here in Canada, my master's subject was there in Brazil. So I went back. And social sciences also has this fieldwork side. And that was actually my favorite part of it too, was that I then went in the field and I was doing interviews with small-scale fishers at the beach as they were coming back from their daily trips. And I would just meet them on the boats, just bringing the boats back to the shore. And I would start talking to them and having the interviews done. So I met a lot of different fishermen and fisherwomen there as part of that process. And I learned a lot doing that. And it was interesting that it was a completely different learning experience than I had as a researcher going out in the field, collecting samples for my seagrass and sea turtle conservation research. And I learned a lot about them from just their stories and the things that they lived in their everyday lives, and looking at that protected area and knowing exactly what was going on there and the areas they thought should be protected and the areas they thought maybe should have different levels of protection and maybe should be allowed in different times of the year. So there was a lot of understanding that from them, that protected area was actually being protected by them already, and that by the government deciding they wanted to do a protected area, they were actually taking that away from them, almost as if they were saying they were not doing a good job protecting it themselves. Yeah, that was a kind of a turning point in my career to change from the natural sciences to the social sciences and just learn that other side of the story and how conservation was impacting people directly and how we could do it in a different way by including them in that scenario. So yeah, long story. I get pretty excited talking about this and how we do need to give more importance to social sciences as well. As you were saying, social sciences is not, and marine social sciences more specifically too, it doesn't get as much attention as natural sciences.
Yeah, it's very cool to listen to you talk about the social sciences because you're so passionate about it. And a lot of times it gets pushed to the back burner, and it's cool to listen to you talk about it because you bring it to the light, you bring it forward. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, it's great to hear that. Thanks. Yeah, I'm pretty passionate about all this.
So can there be a small scale fishery within a large scale fishery? Like, for example, I'm thinking of like Alaska with salmon. You have the industrial side of the commercial harvest, but you also have the harvest for personal consumption where you have the smaller villages going out versus the commercial side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I see what you mean. So, yes, and when we talk about small-scale fisheries, it's not only for subsistence, for personal consumption. It's also commercial. It could also be commercial small-scale fisheries. So even people catching fish commercially for sale, they can be also considered small-scale fisheries as long as they fit within that other criteria of like operating from a smaller boat and from those coastal communities and all those other things that I mentioned. But yes, and in the same fishery, so people targeting the same fisheries resource, they could be doing that in different ways. So there could be an industrial fisheries targeting a certain resource and then a smaller small-scale fishery operating from the coast that is catching that same resource as well, but in different ways from different kinds of boats or using different kinds of gear and having a different kind of system too. So yeah, I think what you mean by with the salmon fishery example in Alaska, I see it as the subsistence one. It seems that it could be considered a small-scale fishery. And then there's also the industrial side of it that the fishery could be operating as an industrial fisheries as well.
All right.
So I guess that brings us to the podcast itself. So I'm to understand that you're going to be co-hosting the podcast every once in a while. So how did you find out about the podcast and what inspired you to become part of it?
I found out about it on Twitter, actually. I just saw that they were looking for other co-hosts, and I thought it could be a good opportunity for me to meet other people doing fisheries research. And I've always liked to connect with people doing fisheries research, and not only research, but also work in NGOs, doing things related to fisheries or fishers, so fishermen and fisherwomen themselves. So anyone really connected to fisheries, I've always liked learning from them and different stories from different kinds of backgrounds. As part of my master's, as I was mentioning, I did a lot of interviews with small-scale fishers. And I felt like I learned a lot from them from doing it. So I wanted to become a co-host of the Fisheries Podcast to have that opportunity of interviewing people in the sector and learning more from their stories, their experiences, and sharing that with other people. Because I do think that that's one of the best ways for us to connect with it and with fisheries in general is to hear personal stories, personal experiences. I feel that we connect on another level than when we're reading a paper or when we are reading a report or anything like that. I feel like we can learn and retain that knowledge in a different way. And sometimes that could inspire us to do different things in fisheries or even bring us to this career. So yeah, so I'm really excited to join the Fisheries Podcast as a co-host, and I'll be looking for people to interview. So if anyone listening to this is interested in being interviewed and you have an interesting story to tell about your career in fisheries or the work you've been doing, then I would be happy to talk to you and go from there.
All right. Awesome. And Mirella, how can people get a hold of you if they want to get in contact with you?
You can contact me by email. My Gmail is mirellalays@gmail.com. If anyone wants to contact me, you can see in the show announcement.
Well, now that the hard part of the interview is over, we're down to the final five questions. The first question we're going to start out with, Nick always says it's the easiest question, which me and Dawson do not find it as the easiest question, but what is your favorite fish?
My favorite fish, I would say it's the manta ray.
I haven't heard that answer before. That's a good one.
Yeah, that is a good one.
Yeah, I loved manta rays.
So what is your dream job or dream location?
My dream job, I don't have a specific dream job. I would say that my dream job would be to do something meaningful for fisheries and for fishing communities. So as you could tell from our conversation, I'm really passionate about small-scale fisheries and supporting local communities. Yeah, and understanding how they protect the environment and working with local communities to conserve our oceans. So I feel that my dream job would be a job where I'm able to do that, and I can feel that I'm making an impact and helping local fishing communities thrive and keeping our oceans healthy and sustainable for the future. So yeah, any way that I find that I can contribute to that the best, then that would be my dream job. And location, I feel that my dream would be to be able to work from anywhere and work remotely and just travel and see different fisheries in different places in the world and contribute to different communities in different places, I guess.
What is your favorite moment from your career thus far?
I would say is just recently when I was volunteering for OceanWise as a youth ambassador. And as part of the volunteering program, I came up with the idea to develop a mobile app that would facilitate the sales of local fish to local people. So I developed the fish market app. And I feel that a really good moment in my career was just recently when, for the first time, I felt like I was using the different experiences that I've gotten so far in, as I was saying, natural sciences and social sciences, and trying to do something on the ground where there would be a direct connection and a direct benefit to people where I live and maybe in other places. So it felt really good to start seeing that with people coming to me and saying how they were excited about the fish market app and how they're looking forward to having access to local fish more easily and being able to connect with local fishers to purchase their fish. And I felt that a lot of that feedback, the direct feedback that I received from creating that and all the excitement that I got from different people on it, I think that was a really good time in my career to feel that I was contributing somehow to something that people were looking forward to. So yeah, that was probably, it was pretty recently, and I'm still working to finally release the app soon. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to it, and I feel like it was probably the best moment so far.
So is that app going to be widespread, or is it just going to be in your local area?
For now, we're going to test it in Newfoundland and Labrador, but I do plan on expanding the app if it does work out here, if it does seem to be a good fit for other places, then I do plan on expanding to other places because it is an open mobile app where anyone can sign up as a fish harvester or as a consumer and just interact with each other to have access to local fish. So they can chat using the app, they can see where the fishers are on the map and look at their profiles and learn about them, all the fishers and then their communities, and then ultimately have access to fresh fish. So it's a pretty open app that it would have the ability to be used in other places as well, using your location and the location of fishers around you.
Very cool.
So our next question is, if money was not an issue, what is one project you would like to work on?
Well, if money wasn't an issue, I think I would like to continue developing this app right now. That's what I can think of right now. So because money has been an issue to move it ahead. So yeah, if money wasn't an issue, I would like to be able to have this project that I started with the fish market app, making it available to anyone, anywhere, where local people would be able to connect with and learn from local fishers and have access to fresh fish and know more about where their fish is coming from, how it's being caught, and who are the people behind it. I feel like we value our food much more when we have that connection. And we also become more interested in conserving the ocean if we are connected with it somehow through food. And I feel like we can all relate to it. So that's the project that I would like to take ahead. And if money wasn't an issue, I would probably just keep developing it until it reaches a different place in the world.
And see, was I unmuted? Yes. Okay. So final question. If you could have one point or principle programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
So first, that small-scale fisheries are too big to ignore. Small-scale fisheries are really important and really important around the world for food security, for livelihoods of millions of people. And we do need to support small-scale fisheries and to support the implementation of the small-scale fisheries guidelines by the FAO and support local communities. And one of the ways that we can support local fishing communities is first just to learn about them, learn from them, and if possible, buy fresh fish from them as well, because I feel that we can learn a lot from the people that use the ocean directly, people who fish, people who are local resource users. So as fishery scientists and as oceanographers or anyone who has focused more on the natural sciences, like myself when I started in oceanography, I feel that we can learn a lot from connecting with people who directly use the ocean and rely on it for their livelihoods. We can learn a lot from them. So I feel that we need to remember that it's a two-way relationship, because sometimes there's a focus on telling people what to do. So we do our research and we provide advice and recommendations on what should be done. But we should also listen, and we should also try to learn from those people who are directly involved with it, what they think, how they perceive it, what they think would be the best way to go about it as well, and what are their values, and try to align with their values and have them connect with you and join you in that ultimate goal of conservation and sustainability of our oceans. It's something that I believe we can all agree on, and we would all like to be able to rely on our oceans and to have a sustainable ocean for our future. So I feel that we should be open to listen to local resource users as scientists, and as marine social scientists, also talk across disciplines and learn from other disciplines. And I feel like really the future of our ocean depends on us collaborating as coming from different backgrounds, different disciplines, different ways, different forms of knowledge, and coming together to try to collaborate and work together towards a common goal.
Excellent answer, Mirella.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for being on the show today.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure. And yeah, I can't wait to be a co-host as well and to do my first interviews.
If you would like to get a hold of us, you can find us at Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod, or old-fashioned email at feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts and hoodies available on Teespring. I'm Jacob Ashley. Thanks for listening to the 143rd episode of the Fisheries Podcast.
And remember, small-scale fisheries are too big to ignore.